Song is addressed to my sisters. Any man who is present may listen. Any priest, any public official, any physician. But it gives him no license to touch us. We make the decision. Me and Lydia, Rosie and Josie and Dee. We handle these matters ourselves. You'd better believe, or you'd better leave.
Hi, this is Jennifer Kemp, Rosie, and I'm here today with Judith Arcana. Hi, Judith.
Hi, Jennifer.
So could you tell me about Jane? What was it?
What was it? Its official name was actually the Abortion Counseling Service of the Chicago Women's Liberation Union. So you could say that Jane is the nickname. It was an underground provider, as we say now. The word provider, the term was, of course, never used in those days. That started in 1968 in Chicago and ran until a couple months after the Roe decision in January of 73.
So how did it begin?
It began when a young woman, a student at the University of Chicago, found an abortionist for a friend of a sister of a friend, actually, and realized that even though it was illegal, there were people who were doing it and that they could be found. And she continued to get calls after her friend called her and saw the need, and she was a political person. And so she thought, okay, this is a good thing to do. And then she called a meeting and other women joined up and it began.
So what types of women came to the service and what types worked there?
I will say that pretty much any type of woman you could imagine came to the service, with one exception, and that would be rich women, because, of course, they never have a problem getting abortion services, and were always able for X amount of dollars to either go to Puerto Rico or London or Japan or pay a lot of money to their own doctors. But other than that, women across races, across classes, across ethnic groups, and from not only various neighborhoods in the city of Chicago, but also the states and towns nearby came to the service. And working in the service, for the years that it existed, between 4 and 5, women between the ages of 18 and 45. There was one woman in her 60s. She was in for a while. Some students, housewives, some women, of course, this is a long time ago we're talking about, with full-time / professional jobs, mostly white women. By the end, some women of color. That's who was a Jane.
What about the women that worked there?
That is the women who worked there.
Okay, so the women that went there and the women that worked there were...
Well, as I said, the women who came were really more various. That little set that I just added at the end, that's the women who worked there.
Oh, okay. So how did you personally get involved with the service?
Actually, like a certain percentage of the others, I thought I was pregnant in the summer of 1970, and that would have been a very bad time for me to be making a person inside of my body for a variety of reasons, which we do not have time to go into. With a much longer interview, I could tell you the whole story. And I called a friend who was a medical student, figuring, well, you know, he ought to know. And here's an interesting thing. He asked people around the medical school. This is at the University of Illinois Medical School in the city of Chicago in 70. And they all said, call this number and ask for Jane. That's what the folks in the professional arena were saying. So I did. And as it happened that summer, I didn't actually need an abortion. It was like the latest period ever. But the women that I met were so interesting to me, and the work that they were doing was so huge that I joined up when they had an orientation a few months later in the fall, a little meeting in a church in Chicago.
So you were there 2 years, right?
Yes.
What made you decide to leave?
Well, there was, as usual, a constellation of reasons. First of all, the service got busted in May, early May of 1972. There were 7 women working that day, and I was one of those. So those 7 we had to pull ourselves out of the medical work and do, I guess you could say, legal work for several months. So that was one thing. I was sort of pulled out of the ranks. And when it was time to go back was when, or when we thought, well, hell, we're going back. The others were carrying on, of course. I reassessed my life. I had at that time a very tiny baby on purpose. And I also was in a marriage that was not a good one. It wasn't bad, given American marriages, but it was not the marriage for me, let's put it that way. So the marriage was ending. I was trying to figure out whether I should be a high school teacher again. I had this tiny baby. I had been one of the busted. And I was, my life just needed to be reassessed. I might have gone back if Roe hadn't passed after 6 months or so, but within 6 months, that's exactly what happened. So,
and so besides working with the service, you're also a poet and a writer. How much of your writing was inspired by your work with them?
Certainly one whole book called What If Your Mother, which you, bless you, have right here. And that's a collection of poems and monologues about abortion, adoption, miscarriage, biotech, and some of the sweeter aspects of motherhood as well, but mainly hard stuff. And that was certainly, that book is rooted still in my work as a Jane. I'm currently working on a collection of stories that are probably rooted in my work as a Jane, and a few other pieces here and there. And then lots of other stuff, which, except in the way that everything is everything, don't have much to do with my work as a Jane.
Yeah, I read What If Your Mother, and it was really powerful for me.
Thank you.
Do you want to read one of the poems?
Sure. Sure, I'll do that. Folks, Jennifer has chosen a set of poems, and I looked over her list quickly before we hit the mics here, and I chose this one from the ones that she had chosen. It's called Hard Times, Fast River. Don't you just hate it when you start to cry and other people think you're crying because of something they know, but you're not? You're not. You're crying because what's happening has knocked the heart of your memory sideways. And the pain of that sideways heart is making you sob. Sobs struggle out around the pushed-in part of your lungs where the heart is pressing and your throat is too thin. The sobs fill it up. You can't breathe. You can't stop crying. And the people keep hugging you, touching you, saying they understand when they don't. They don't. They don't even know they don't.
Wow.
Well, there's a response every poet wants. Thank you.
Would you like to read another one?
Tell me a title. What else did you
choose? What about Lucky?
Oh, Lucky. We were talking before we went on the air, folks, about how some of these poems are heavy and some are very heavy and some are not so hard. Hard in the sense of, oh, you got to think about that. You can't just pass by. Lucky's probably one of those, wouldn't you say, Jennifer?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, Lucky. First child, a boy, sweet little person, starting to talk, wanting to read, almost enough money, hard to get enough money, to be a good mother. Then this one starts up. Surprise! Then, uh-oh, no daddy. Maybe keep it anyway. This could be a little girl, dreamy lover mother says. Then she'd have a pair, Dick and Jane, Jack and Jill, Hansel and Gretel. But no one granted her three magic wishes. She knew what she should do. Decision colored sticky red, shining like an exit sign, glowing in the dark like a stoplight. Lucky for the little girl, safe from all the big bad wolves, all those scary stories she'd never have to hear. No bad dreams or screams.
Yeah, that was one of my favorites as well.
Oh, good. Thank you.
So I was wondering, how do you think public opinion and the political climate regarding abortion have changed since the days when the service was active?
Well, many ways. And of course, you knew. And when you wrote that question, this is a really complicated question that requires, you know, like days and years and the rest of our lives to talk about. I'll say a few things. One is that it's important for people to realize that the last 35 to 40 years have seen the rise and the success of a powerful movement, the anti-abortion movement in the United States. And at the time that the Janes were working in that underground, when abortion was still illegal, no such movement existed. Certainly there were people who didn't like abortion, didn't approve of abortion, were glad it was illegal. But they were actually a minority. Easily 70% of the population in the United States was in favor of abortion being legal, and certainly an individual woman's choice, perhaps in conference with her doctor, her family, whatever. But in these last 35, 40 years, the language has been shaped by the anti-abortion movement with, of course, the complicity of the media, not KBOO, but the big media, who use the language they made up. They made up, for instance, the term partial birth abortion, which is meaningless medically, a term that frightens people and was designed to do so, to refer to long terms. They made up the title for themselves, the pro-life movement, as if you weren't in their movement, you weren't in favor of being alive. And that language and their way of thinking about what abortion is, what it might be, what reproductive justice is, and what it might be, have become dominant, so that issues of shame and guilt are writ not only large, but quite differently than they were in the decades of history in the United States, certainly in the first half of the 20th century, prior to their initiation and, as I say, successful rise. They, for instance, began with a bang, with a dreadful, dreadful and successful act, the creation of the Hyde Amendment, which made it impossible for anyone using government funding, federal government funding, to use it for abortion services. So this means that women in the Postal Service, women in the military, women on welfare, and many other categories cannot include abortion services, medical services for abortion, in their funded health care. I could go on, but we don't have enough time. But there are huge differences, and they are cultural, they are intellectual, they are spiritual, moral, and ethical, as well as political.
I guess that really speaks to the political part of the question, but what about how public opinion has changed?
Well, I think that the public opinion change is resident in or next to this stuff that I was talking about language, in that when they frame it, they are also framing the emotions and the thoughts, the decisions, the votes, as well as the actions of the people who pick up that language, so that people now say in public opinion polls very different things from the ones that they said prior to January of 1973, and even prior to the middle 70s in the 20th century. People are afraid of abortion now. They think more people in the United States think it's a bad thing. Ironically, countries which have been virulently anti-abortion for a long time are now, let's say, Colombia, Mexico, that are growing more progressive in their views about abortion and related stuff like contraception than the United States, under the influence of this mind-changing and therefore action-changing and vote-changing movement that is the anti-abortion movement.
And you said that prior to Roe v. Wade, it was 70% were in favor of legal abortions. Do you?
Yes, which is, of course, one of the reasons that empowered the court to make the decision that it made and fostered the years of preparation for the legal team that brought that case to the court, which was only decided in January 73, but which was in the works for a long time before that. Yeah, about 70%. You can read different, you know, 69, 73, whatever, but yeah.
I don't know if you know this offhand, but do you know what recent percentages have been like?
I'm thinking high 50s, low 60s.
Okay, so a pretty significant drop.
Yeah, I would call it significant. And also with a much greater ignorance of what abortion services actually are. Again, that would take too long. I keep wanting to go off in other directions. Okay, what do you got for me next?
Okay, do you think the assassination of Dr. Tiller was an anomalous event, or is it part of a larger trend? I guess you answered that somewhat.
Yeah, but I will say this. Not only is it part of a larger trend, but one of the terrible and terrifying ironies of the election of President Obama, or any really good president, is that the bad guys, the anti-abortion movement, get really nervous when the people at the top are not their people. And so they tend to act out more readily, and their violent wing, their terrorist wing, which is, of course, the source of the assassination of George Tiller, as well as the assassination of doctors before him, and more clinic bombings, more violence, more threats, street-level violent vibes, that goes up when the federal and some state administrations get better. That's what I mean by the terrible irony. So no, it's no aberration. There was a terrific bulge in clinic violence around the United States in 2007, actually, and a bombing, at least one, because of many things, but tied readily in the terms that I'm using now to the increase in Democratic wins in Congress and the Senate, in the House and the Senate, because the power seemed to be slipping away even though George Bush was still president. So they ramped it up.
I know that there's a documentary about Jane. What can you tell me about that?
And
what was your role in its production?
Two things. First of all, I'm going to tell right now the folks listening that tomorrow, Thursday, at 7 o'clock here in Portland at the Red and Black Cafe, the documentary about the service is going to be shown. It's called Jane, an Abortion Service. And the Red and Black Cafe, for those of you who do not already frequent it, is at 400 Southeast 12th at the corner of Oak. The event is a benefit for our local women's bookstore. They're going to pass the hat, I think. So the film is about an hour long. It'll be shown Thursday evening. It was made early to mid 90s about events that took place in the late 60s and early 70s. It's focused on the abortion service. I'm actually in it. I'm one of the talking heads in this documentary. It's made by two excellent women, the filmmakers Kate Kurtz and Nell Lundy. It's been on public TV. It's been at the festivals and so on. It's been around for a long time, and although the abortion service, the underground in Chicago, appears in other documentaries, this is the only one that focuses specifically on the service and is, quote-unquote, about the Janes.
Well, thanks. I'm definitely going to go to that. I hope all of you out there listening will consider going as well. We have a little bit of extra time, so if there's anything that you'd like to discuss further...
Yeah, I want to tell people a couple of other things. One is that the Hyde Amendment, which I mentioned earlier, is one of those things that comes up every year for renewal. That is to say, they get a chance to vote it away, to disappear it, and they haven't done that yet. Now, people in the National Network of Abortion Funds and other very wonderful organizations in the United States are working on that, and so should everybody who's listening to us today, Jennifer. Repeal the Hyde Amendment so that women who have few to no funds for reproductive justice, for reproductive health, for reproductive freedom, for their own abortion services, can get those services paid for on their health plans. Another thing that I like to talk about when I'm in situations like this is the Roe decision itself and its power or lack thereof in our time. It's great that it's still on the books. It's great that the bad guys haven't been able to overturn it. But it's extremely important that people realize that it actually has been eviscerated over time. The Hyde Amendment was only the beginning, so that now it is actually very, very, very difficult for many, many women and girls in the United States to get abortion services when they need them, either because there's a waiting period, there are parental or spousal consents, they have to go watch a movie, they have to travel 2 days, they have to take an extra test, the prices have gone up, and of course, because the practitioners, the providers are walking around in bulletproof vests. They have to pay for insurance on their clinics. The folks who work so bravely in the clinics are also under the duress of this added need for security and how expensive it is. All of that is true at the same time that it is still true that Roe is what makes it quote unquote legal to have an abortion in the United States in the year 2009, but it's really difficult to get one, interestingly enough. Were there other things that we talked about before we began? Oh, here's a wonderful thing. There's a magazine from the organization Catholics for Choice. This is not an oxymoron. It's a wonderful magazine, Conscience. Really smart, really smart. They do the research. They put it out there. The current issue is focused on long terms, as the Janes used to call them, which are second trimester abortions, which the anti-abortion movement has vilified and demonized. And in fact, that was the specialty of Dr. Tiller, who was skilled and compassionate and served the needs of many, many, many women over the years. Well, one of the articles in this current issue of Conscience is by one of the United States' most effective organizers, a woman named Susan Yano, and she ends her article by saying, "This is the slogan we need: abortion as early as possible and as late as necessary." It's very important for people not to believe in the vilification and demonization of late abortion, as if women just sort of, oh gosh, wow, I guess I'm late, I better run over there and get it done, instead of the incredible complications, the difficulties, the causes for making women wait, the reasons for women not knowing, the reasons for women, quote unquote, deciding later, are heartrending in many cases, angry-making in others, and this is one of the issues that needs our attention. Perhaps the assassination of Dr. Tiller will make people pay more attention to what it means to get a late-term abortion, as if that were some sort of whim and exigency of scheduling that the woman was not in charge of. I think it's important that people realize that there will always be a need for abortion. There's contraceptive failure, there's contraceptive danger, the ones that really work are hard on your body. The ones that aren't so good are harder to, are sometimes hard to get. And human error. Human error. We're all just people here. We're doing our best. Sometimes we slip up. So we need abortion to be legal and readily available and humanely and kindly done as a backup for contraceptive use. And of course, education that goes beyond abstinence only.
Would you like to read another poem?
Sure, sure. What else you got there on your list of possibles? What would you like me to read?
How about You Don't Know, page 14?
You Don't Know. That's one of my favorites, too. It may sound odd that the person who wrote them has favorites, but it's the case. You Don't Know. You think I didn't care about that baby. Didn't wonder if we'd like each other when she turned 14. Didn't think he'd follow anywhere his older brother went. You think we'd take them out like gangsters, disappear them like generals. You don't know how it works then, do you? You don't know what sits on both sides of the scale, what it means to decide what I got and what I gave that baby I didn't have. Baby who couldn't make me laugh, applesauce upside down on her head, couldn't make me cry, taking his first step right off the porch. You don't even know that this is not about regret. You don't know one blessed I say blessed thing about it.
Well, thank you so much, Judith.
Thank you, Jennifer. And everybody, remember, they're showing that documentary tomorrow night at the Red and the Black, 7 p.m.
Okay, I'm Jennifer Kemp. This is Judith Arcana. This is KBOO Portland.
What in heaven's name were you thinking of, Rosie Jane? Was it love?